that has been building informed, inclusive, and participatory neighborhoods since 1968. We proudly serve as the District 3 Coalition for the 19 neighborhoods that make up District 3 in inner Southeast Portland and parts of Northeast Portland. On behalf of the more than 50 civic, business, and community-based organizations in the District 3 Coalition, thank you for being here tonight, and a special thanks to the University of Western States for being our gracious host. Please take care of yourself this evening. There's water and snacks out in the atrium, and the restrooms can be found all the way down this hall and across the atrium and down the hall. I know that many of us are carrying a sense of uncertainty as we come together around the tough budget cuts that our city faces. Tonight's an opportunity to speak directly to the leaders who will make the very difficult decisions about the budget and to show them the ways in which these decisions will have real impacts on real lives. Our city council is here to listen. They're here to listen to you, the people who know our communities the best. And as you stand before them, know that your words matter. Your stories matter. You're not just advocating for yourself, but for your families, your neighbors, and the future of our city. We may not all agree on how every dollar should be spent, but each one of us is here because we care deeply about our city and because we share the same goal, to have Portland that is thriving, equitable, and a sustainable place for all who call it home. So please be kind, be respectful, and be neighborly. So here's how tonight's gonna go. Councilor Morella is gonna kick us off in just a moment. And then we will receive a brief budget overview from Budget Director Ruth Levine. After that, Engagement Officer Amanda Garcia Snell will introduce us to a budget reduction exercise and that everyone is invited to complete tonight, and our clipboards over on the counter over there. And finally, she'll instruct us on how tonight's both in-person and virtual testimony will work before calling folks up to get in the queue. So again, thank you for showing up and for showing that you care about our city. Now please join me in welcoming District 3 City Councilor Angelina Moran.
I'm a little too short, I think, to stand behind this screen, so I'll go over here. Hi everyone. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here and to participate in your democracy. It's absolutely wonderful to have so many people attend these events, and your feedback is going to be really critical at this time as the city, county, and frankly federal government are in some strange and difficult financial times. So, like a lot of other local governments, we're facing a historic budget gap, and expenses are growing a lot faster than a lot of our revenue, so your feedback at this moment is going to be really critical. One-time funding, like federal pandemic resources, is running out. That's part of the issue that we're seeing with some of our revenue, and our community needs to continue investing in a lot of the critical programs that are serving our community, including programs that help our unsheltered houseless population, making our neighborhoods safe, taking care of our parks, all of the things that make Portland what Portland is. And so just like any household or business, the city government has to balance the budget, and we're going to be faced with a lot of tough choices. And I think that a lot of us don't want to sugarcoat that. We want to be frank with you about those tough choices. You know what's coming, and we want to make sure that we're getting your feedback as we're making those hard decisions. We are in a great position to make a lot of thoughtful choices ahead. We have committees that are dedicated to different issue areas. I know me and my fellow councilors are digging into some of these tough issues within the committees, and we've been getting testimony both in the committees, at council meetings, and getting really thoughtful and deep briefings from our city staff on a lot of these issues as well. As city councilors, it's our job to set policies and pass the city's budget. And so we're here tonight asking for your help in setting those policies and setting that budget. You may have read some of the preliminary recommendations that were created by the city administrator, Michael Jordan. And I want to emphasize again that those were recommendations that were made, and that as city council and as the community, we have the right to change those recommendations, to throw them out entirely, or to say that we like some of those things and we're going to keep them. So we welcome all of your thinking about what things you would like to save, what things you are willing to let go of. And city staff are going to produce a report with all of the feedback that we receive in this council meeting. I know we have other counselors and their staff here with us today. There's an extra seat for you, Councilor Avalos, if you'd like to sit over there. So to ground us in the city's financial choices, Budget Director Ruth Levin will give a short presentation. And so I would love to invite Ruth up here to begin that process. Again, thank you all so much for your time and for being here today.
All right. I'll try to advance the slides. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Councilor Rio, for those opening remarks. You hit on a lot of the things I was going to say before I dove into the details, but just quickly, my name is Ruth Levine. I'm the director of the City Budget Office, and I'm very excited to be here with you tonight. I have a very brief overview of the city's budget situation and process for you, because we're mostly here tonight to hear from all of you. With that, there's a lot more information on the City Budget Office website at portland.gov/budget. And on there, we have a budget intro page that covers some basic budget 101 type content. So encourage you all to visit there, and please reach out if you have any questions. 311 is a great way to get in touch with us if you have questions or need more information. There's also a written testimony form that I know we're going to plug elsewhere, but if you don't get a chance to testify tonight, or you have something on your mind later in the process and you would like to submit it via written testimony, we are also compiling all of that and presenting that to the City Council, so, and it will be on the record as well. So Councilor Rio mentioned the preliminary budget recommendations. And these were recommendations that came out that were released by the city administrator at the end of February. They're somewhat similar to the, for those of you who have had experience with the city's budget process before, what we used to call the Bureau's requested budgets. It was just sort of an evolution of that in our new form of government. And so, as Councilor Rio said, they are just a starting point. They are intended to, support discussions with the community, like the one we're having here tonight. So just quickly to give you some grounding in where that is and why we're talking about a historic budget gap, this graphic that's on the screen gives you a sense of kind of what we're talking about in terms of the mismatch between revenues and expenditures for fiscal year 2025-26. So the city is legally required to produce a balanced budget matching our expenditures to our revenues. And the budget gap that we've been talking about, this slide shows you what we call the general fund, and that is essentially the most flexible pot of money. It's where our property taxes, our business license taxes, and other major taxes go. And it supports major city services, including public safety, fire, police, parks, housing, a lot of the central services, and a whole host of other programs. But it is not the entire city's budget, and I will show you another slide on some of the funds outside of the general fund. It's important to note that the documents, the recommendations that were released in February, were not balanced, meaning there were no recommendations that said this is exactly how you should make all of the required reductions and additions in order to come up with a balanced budget. So again, it's really just a starting point. So the $93 million general fund gap is comprised of three sort of buckets. One is the roughly $20 million gap of that's sort of the revenue shortfall. So property taxes didn't come in as strong as we had anticipated because of largely due to property tax values in the central city. And so just to continue programs that have ongoing funding at their current levels, there is a roughly $20 million gap. In addition, there's about $30 million that represents one-time funding that was allocated in the current fiscal year, but that is expiring. Much of that funding came from the American Rescue Plan from the federal government, as well as resources that were one-time in nature, meaning they were due to revenues coming in above forecasts, but that then came back down. So we saw a lot of that during the pandemic with business profits for businesses being sort of unusually high, and they have now sort of come back down to earth in terms of the curve that they're following, but that generated a lot of one-time revenue. And then last is newly identified priorities, and this includes things like the mayor's sheltering proposals, as well as a host of other things, security improvements and the like. And so all of this is still up for, very much up for discussion. Going to the next slide, funds outside of the general fund have their own unique funding situations. They each proposed potential reductions that would close their specific funding gap. And so you can see those here. I'm not gonna get into the details, but there's pretty significant gaps in transportation and parks. Parks is in part connected to the parks levy, which will be up for renewal in 2026. And in transportation, there's been sort of the transportation revenues have struggled to regain their pre-pandemic levels in a couple of areas. That's leading to the need to make reductions there. So in terms of the recommendations, here's a quick summary of the general fund. So far the recommendations identified about $17 million of reductions just in general fund in our discretionary resources. It also identified almost $19 million of interest that accrued in the Portland Clean Energy Fund, but that the committee has discussed transferring over to the general fund. So that would be sort of revenue to the general fund, even though it's not new revenue to the city. That leaves a remaining gap of roughly $57 million. The options for closing that remaining gap are, there were some reductions put on the table for fire, police, and 911 that were not recommended, but that would generate $35.7 million at sort of the 8% reduction level. And then there's some discussion, and you can see this in the documents that are posted on our website, about additional cuts. In addition, on the sort of revenue side, there's we're currently undergoing an exercise to try to figure out how much one-time underspending from this fiscal year could be applied sort of proactively to next fiscal year. And that's in part tied to some direction from the city administrator to reduce spending this year that came out back in August. And then also looking at external revenue sources with other jurisdictional partners, the state and the like, and that is a continuing conversation. So in terms of process, we're excited to be doing the first one of these tonight. We have three more in the rest of the districts throughout the next couple of weeks. And then the mayor will release his balanced budget at the very beginning of May, and he will present that to City Council, who will then go through an intense period of considering amendments to that balanced budget proposal, and we'll begin to hear and take action on the budget in mid-May. All right, I think I'm gonna pass it to.
So much for coming. We are going to move into our public comment period. But before we do that, I just want to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to complete the budget reduction exercise. It's available in hard copy, and then there are also QR codes posted about. You can scan it. There's a link for online participants, and we will have that link available on the budget planning pages for the next 3 weeks. And so if you hadn't had a chance, you can do that after this meeting, or there's still time. So the budget reduction exercise is really an opportunity for you all to help prioritize spending cuts by sharing your thoughts about what those should be. If you have questions about the budget reduction exercise, there are some folks out in the front that can help you out. So before we go into the public comment period, I just wanted to share a few ground rules with folks. Tonight is about hearing from you all. It's not a back and forth conversation. We'll strike a balance between in-person and online testimony. So we'll take 9 people in the room, and then we'll have 3 people provide testimony online, and then 9 in the room. And we'll just follow that cadence for the time period that we have for public comment. We have about 2 hours for testimony, and we will limit each to 90 seconds. Please do your best to stick to that time. So that we can hear from as many folks as possible. The timer will be up on the screen, although it will be, it turns out it'll be a little bit small. So we do have some little notes cards that we'll be holding up in the front here so that you can see when your time clock is running low. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. And please declare if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. So we really appreciate you coming, and we do ask for your respect for your community members, and we ask that you, if you are disruptive Sorry, I gave away my notes, and so now I can't remember exactly what I'm supposed to say. But we're just asking for you all to be really respectful, stick to your time so that we can allow for as many public comment as possible. And if you are disruptive, then you will be asked to quiet down. Please take your seat, and if that doesn't happen, then there is a potential for being removed. If you're online, we will mute you if you go over time. Oh, thank you so much. Okay, the official language. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being muted or asked to leave. Please know that this meeting is recorded. And thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. If you have questions or you prefer to not provide testimony, there are some 3x5 cards that are placed at the front and around the room. You're welcome to write your question down. And those things will be added to a frequently asked questions document that's on the budget planning page. We'll be updating that document as we receive questions and then posting that for anybody that would like to see it. If you are online, you can put your question into the question and answer function, and your question will be captured and added to that document as well. And with that, I think we will move into our public comment. So I'm going to go ahead and call the first 9 people. So Kristen McCarthy, James O'Loughlin, Eric Esqueda, if you could come up, and you three can sit at this front table, and then in the queue over here on the this side of the room, if we could have Melissa Fritz, Kate Walker, Terry Parker, Eric Pang, Bing Wong, and Andrea Heverkamp. So this little box is a microphone. Yes, they are. We just had to angle the table a little more, but we can. Sorry about that. We're just going to ask you to And we'll move this table. Sorry about that.
So that everyone can address that.
Right on deck. I think I was there, so I could just hand it on.
Yeah. Hi, everyone ready? Okay. My name is Chris McCarthy, and my 3.5-year-old daughter here attends preschool at Montebella and gymnastics and ballet at St. John's Peninsula. We're absolutely appalled by the proposed cuts to family and child programming. The community center, summer camps, and after-school programming are just as vital to our children's development, funding, and providing preschool for all. Shuttering a community center is a blow to Portland residents of all ages and especially impacts socially vulnerable populations like youth and the elderly. Cuts to summer camps and after-school programs hit working and low-income families the hardest, the exact population that preschool for all was designed to reach. It is insulting to read the language on page 27, where it suggests that a workable solution for the impact of a full community center closure is for a community center to take over, as was done in Fulton, Hillside, or Selwood. These communities and community centers are not the same, nor are they particularly good examples as to how the city can abdicate their role and privatize city services by handing them off to a nonprofit and still have the same community reach, whether that's in terms of access or affordability. Fulton was turned into a private French immersion school that costs upwards of $15,000 a year for part-time use. Hillside is a youth soccer camp. Selwood is probably the best example of an organization that provides similar programming, but it does so at 2 to 3 times the cost as analogous Parks and Rec offerings. And it was made largely possible thanks to a donation by a private benefactor who left close to $1 million to ensure the continued, the continued success of Selwood Community House. Really love for the city administrator and the mayor to point out a single individual in Montebella, St. John's, or Peninsula Park who's capable of that. We do understand that cuts have to be made, but the question becomes why here? Why not elsewhere? And why not small cuts across all the community centers? I feel that we're owed transparent answers to this. And we want to know when Portland is going to prioritize investing in the people who are fully invested in Portland. Thank you.
Councilors, Mayor Wilson, first I want to thank you all for creating this public forum of that. Transparent and collaborative, it's a departure from what we've seen from the past in the city. My name is James O'Loughlin, I'm here as a representative of my labor union, Lyona 483, and as a city worker who has seen these budget cycles in the past. And to push back against the idea that cuts always translate to savings. We have a history here in Portland of somewhat conservative budgeting and finding money, you know, through our bump process. And what that frequently translates to is insufficient investment in the community, in our infrastructure, that translates to costs down the line. Something I'm worried about in this process is that the essential services of parks and public works that just connected to the ecosystems of our neighborhoods is going to be harmed in the short term and have long-term ratifications for our businesses, for our city's revenue, and obviously for the services we all rely on. That is something that's really hard to capture in the short time period you've been provided with this abbreviated budget cycle. So I would encourage you all to strongly consider looking at any potential revenue sources, reserves, funds that exist to account for the budget challenges we're facing now, so that we don't make rushed decisions.
Thank you. It wasn't working anyway. My name is Eric Esqueda. I'm a structural engineer here in Portland and current president of the Mount Scott-Arleta Neighborhood Association here in District 3. In 2018, City of Portland voters approved Measure 26201 to levy a 1% tax on large retailers to fund the Portland Clean Energy Fund, to fund new clean energy projects and new opportunities for BIPOC and other marginalized populations in our community. The original authors of the measure expected a $30 million revenue coming in from this measure from the new tax. But here in 2025, with the City of Portland facing a $93 million shortfall, it's projected to bring in seven times that amount at $216 million. It goes without saying that the Portland of 2018 is very different than the Portland of 2025. How can we be expected to build green infrastructure if we can't afford to fund the permitting department? How can we afford to respond to wildfires without a properly funded fire department? And how can we possibly say that we're advancing climate equity if our parks department can't afford to maintain our public green spaces and community centers? So my ask for you today is to preserve the Portland Clean Energy Fund, maintain its nearly $1 billion in reserves, and give it permanent funding consistent with what the original authors intended to operate the Portland Clean Energy Fund, so that we can have a stronger, more resilient, and more equitable society as we face the impending and very real threat of climate change, but use the remainder of that large retailer tax to fund the basic critical services we need to ensure we have a community to protect in the first place. Thank you.
Okay, and next we have Melissa Fritz, Kate Walker, and Terry Parker.
My name is Melissa Fritz, and I come to you guys as a former participant, parent, coach, and I'm going to cry, volunteer, and now employee of Portland Park Sports Rec Office. I live in District 3, and I come from a very diverse community that a lot of the kids don't have access to these programs that you guys are wanting to cut or looking at or temporarily or whatever. But I'm thinking about these kids and what this means to them. And actually even telling them to come here and speak to you guys, they couldn't believe that this was something that was gonna happen. Parks programs have been up there for 50 years. If it's not broke, don't fix it in a way or get rid of it. It serves the communities. It just doesn't serve the kids, but it gives the communities and the kids some place to go and be a part of when there are not opportunities for them to do it. I live in a low income and I live in a diverse, and they don't have a lot of opportunities that a lot of the kids have.
Hello, y'all. My name is Kate Walker. I live in Buckman, and I wanted to start by thanking you for being here today. My budget request is simple. Tax the cars and fund car alternatives. I can run you through the list of reasons why cars are in cities, and I would love to, but I don't have that much time, so I'm going to talk quickly about the cost of a car. There's no such thing as a free car. A car costs thousands of dollars to keep on the road every year. The cost of burning gasoline is just one small part of that. The replacement of tires that have been torn up into microparticles. Microplastics is another cost. There's also a huge capital expense for a vehicle that will end up in a landfill in 20 years. Cars are ridiculously expensive. On average, Americans pay 20% of their household income for transportation. Households in other countries with better public transit spend only 10%. Of their income on transportation. Raising taxes on car transportation makes it more expensive to own a car, which is why we need to fund alternatives to driving. We need more frequent transit service, and we need to expand service hours. We need to build more walkable places. We need to slow the cars down in residential areas and ensure safe streets for kids. The best way to pay for that is to tax the cars, tax the gasoline, tax the big SUVs, tax the heavy vehicles that destroy our roads. Thank you for your time.
My name is Terry Parker, and I just live down the street in Rose City Park. Top priority for Portland's upcoming budget must be to protect all funding for first responders. This includes fully funding both police and fire. The automobile is one of the economic engines that powers our modern economy. Top priority for PBOT's budget must be roadway maintenance as opposed to redesigning streets that takes away motor vehicle infrastructure, thereby increasing traffic congestion, diversion onto residential neighborhoods, and fuel consumption, which in turn adds to across-the-board inflation and increased emissions. As fact-checked and verified, one 40-foot transit bus, two-axle transit bus, can do as much pavement damage as 1,200 cars. With 40 passengers on board, that equates to the wear of 30 cars per passenger. Due to the added weight of batteries, a 40-foot electric bus can do as much damage as 25 cars, or more than 60 cars per passenger on a fully loaded bus. A way must be found, likely through the fare box, for transit passengers to equitably accept more of financial accountability as it applies to helping pay for street repair and maintenance. Bicyclists also need to accept the financial accountability for that exclusive roadway space dedicated to bicycling. My overall concern is not keeping up with maintenance needs as it applies to Portland's built-up infrastructure that includes buildings and everything else will only cost taxpayers more to fix in the future. Thank you.
And next we'll have Eric Peng, Bing Wong, and Andrea Haverkamp.
My name is Eric Payne. I work for the Parks Department, and I've worked for the Parks Department in mostly in East Portland for going on 22 years. And and when I say East Portland, I mean from like 82nd and 205 out. And I have been very struck by the choices it made. This is also the first time in the 22 years that Parks and their budget didn't seem to really engage like the frontline workers or whatever, which may have been a negative overall or seems to be. I have been surprised about the equitable choices that they've made. So in maintenance, the utility crew that they added with the levy, that has had great impacts in East Portland. It's something that we've talked about for years. Also, it was an opportunity for people that have been seasonals forever to have full-time work. As we seem to move the seasonal numbers up and up and kind of exploiting that labor, full-time work for less than full-time benefits. I also have been really struck while I'm in here matching the all the stuff in the community centers, the sun schools. Like sun schools are not, they're heavily out here impacting people that have less. It seems like parks in most of its choices, the basketball programs that I hear people talking about and seeing the signs over there that it'll go away, that are disproportionately out here serving underserved community. And I was very excited for finally a commission to be representative of the city of Portland in the 22 years where we've had two commissioners from East Portland. I am super hopeful that you guys will see past the tradition and move to start like advocating for actually the people who live in East Portland that have been underserved the entire time that I've worked in the city of Portland. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor Wilson and District 3 councilors and visiting 4 and 1 councilors. And also having this community engagement, which I hope is going to be meaningful in this new form of government. I support no cuts to the police and fire departments' budgets. The reason for tax revenue reductions is mostly due to businesses leaving the city core because of safety and houselessness issues. Until the city changes that perception, significant return to historic levels of business activity won't happen. Other boroughs will have to have deeper cuts, but I encourage the city to also use more volunteers, especially I live near Mount Tabor Park and volunteer there. I suggest a small budget savings by stopping the Portland Water Borough's Mount Tabor Reservoir's proposed interpretive signs that the community members and Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association opposes. I'm on the board. Stop the water filtration plant. Providing home water filters costs a fraction of the ongoing costly projects. Only the immune deficient population is most at risk for crypto. Thank you.
Hello, good evening, councilors and Mayor Wilson and neighbors in District 3. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Dr. Andrea Haverkamp, and I am a resident and renter in District 3. Please protect the PBOT Public Street Plaza program for cuts or elimination. This $1 million program transforms parking spaces and car-centered areas to become spaces for humans, spaces for connection. This program is bringing much-needed vitality and foot traffic to neighborhood small businesses, is creating rich places for families and friends to meet, and adding vibrancy and character to our communities. In the Kearns neighborhood where I live, the Rainbow Road Plaza on Southeast Ankeny and 28th is universally loved. Every morning, especially when the weather's nice, the plaza is filled with pets like my dog Spaghetti getting love, the smell of coffee, children laughing, musicians playing music, bike riders enjoying a safe, dedicated place to ride on the greenway. If anything, Portland needs to expand funding and access to street plazas and low-cost street closures so more neighborhoods can enjoy car-free places to meet, mingle, and be merry humans, especially for neighborhoods where parks are a long walk away. And where to cut? The preliminary budget recommendations did not include meaningful cuts to Portland police. We need to have an even-keeled conversation about community safety and financial resiliency in relation to this budget. Portland's police budget is over $300 million. We need to consider meaningful cuts to Portland police staff and programs that remove graffiti and sweep homeless encampments. Please protect Portland street response and consider reductions elsewhere. Again, please maintain PBOT Street Plaza program. Thank you again.
And now we will take three online comments. First, Lisa Kostova, and then Alan Field, and then Ted Levy.
Hello, councilors. Thank you for having me. My message is simple. You get more of what you invest in. This budget cuts the remaining bare essential services to your residents. Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
I think we can't hear you. 1 second.
Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you for having me, council members. My name is Lisa Kostova, and
we're just having a technical moment here with us. Okay, how about now?
Great. Thank you, council members. You get more of what you invest in. This budget cuts the remaining bare essential services to your residents while subsidizing anyone who wants to come to Portland and live on the street. Over half of the broken down homeless cars and RVs on our street that cause massive pollution have out-of-state license plates. They somehow drove all the way from Florida and Texas, and now you're going to cut pothole repairs so that Portland Street Response can cater to these new arrivals. Why don't you share data on what percentage of the homeless growth comes from out-of-state people moving in to take advantage of this gravy train? U.S. cities that take in similar amounts of property tax dollars provide monthly or weekly street cleaning. Portland provides no residential street cleaning. Other cities maintain their city trees. Portland requires homeowners to prune and remove trees at the cost of tens of thousands of dollars. The city trees push up the sidewalk, which other cities maintain. But Portland expects the homeowner to hire contractors and pay to fix the sidewalk. Homeowners are free city maintenance workers. While the homeless around the corner get services with no expectation of doing any public service in return. We are put in the absurd position to lobby the city to remove homeless camps from the sidewalk so we can pay to repair it, while Portland Street Response keep the homeless on that same sidewalk with comforts and wellness checks. We already have Adopt Your Sidewalk, Adopt Your Drain, Adopt Your City Trees. What's next? The cuts to park and PBOT services are an abdication of city responsibility to the homeowner community. you're signaling your priorities to residents. We're teetering on the precipice of the city going bankrupt because of mass taxpayer exodus. Everything I presented is backed up by data and my lived experience. Thank you.
And go ahead, Alan Field.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'll start over if I can. I'm Alan Field. I live in the Richmond neighborhood in Southeast Portland. I'm on the Richmond Neighborhood Association board and am the representative to Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Coalition. So I'm testifying in my individual capacity. I'm here to urge council to restore the $80,000 proposed cut that is for funding for insurance for the four coalition offices and all the NAs underneath them, and not to cut the $160,000 for the small grant program. Portland's neighborhood association system is robust civic engagement and representation that happens in the 90 plus neighborhoods all over Portland. In Richmond, we serve our community in so many ways, from providing waste and recycling cleanups, movies in the park, mediating good neighbor agreements and neighborhood disputes, to creating a forum for neighbors to learn about the city and projects and policies, local building developments, and emergency preparedness. Neighbor associations throughout the city provide tens of thousands of hours for volunteer service towards our neighborhoods. If insurance funding is lost, more than half of the neighborhood associations in the city will likely fold. They cannot afford the insurance. So the funds can be obtained by reallocating funds from recent staff vacancies in the four district coalitions. On the grant program, that is central to how coalitions support and empower small groups and organizations to do a wide variety of projects in the community. In Richmond, we got a grant to install a telehealth booth. In another organization, we installed raised beds in a local homeless camp. The grant program is very cost-effective and accessible. The $160,000 can be obtained by eliminating two vacancies in civic life and reallocate them. Thank you.
And Ted Levy.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Ted Labby, and I live in the Kearns neighborhood, District 3. I'm the executive director of the Portland nonprofit DPAVE. DPAVE transforms pavement into pocket green spaces across the city and the world. Our latest project is to transform an overpaved, dangerous street in the central east side into a shady, amenity-rich pocket park that also serves to improve bike and ped safety at two high-crash arterials near Stark and Southeast Sandy. This is a neighborhood that has some of the lowest access to parks and tree cover in the city. I'm here tonight to ask you to protect the PBOT Plaza and Play Streets program. If the proposed cuts are implemented, our cherished plazas like the Rainbow and Hawthorne plazas will go away. We also will not be able to create new plazas or support the existing plazas we have. We need to increase foot traffic, especially downtown. People need places to visit and stay, interact, and get out of their homes and off their devices. We work in partnership with PBOT, and without the plaza program, our project will be jeopardized, and the 7,000 new households that are coming to the Central East Side, which is part of the central city, will be without access to parks and public spaces. Thank you.
And now we'll take our next 9 in-person public comments. Lisa Olivares, Chris Gustafson, Sven Werner, Scott Kuhlbaugh, Thomas Gately, Marianne Schurett, Alan Combs, and Pooja Bhatt. And go ahead, Lisa.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for your time. My name is Lisa Olivares. I'm a Portland resident. I'm also the executive director of Northwest Trails Alliance, or NWTA, a local cycling-focused trail stewardship and advocacy organization and partner with Portland Parks and Recreation. We work in partnership with Portland Parks' Sun Community Schools program across the city, including at Grout Elementary and Lean Middle School here in District 3. We also work with the team at Montevilla Community Center. I encourage the council to reject proposed cuts to Sun. Sun schools are critical neighborhood hubs that serve families in dozens of ways. NWTA's work with Sun is to offer after-school off-road cycling programs for kids who may not have otherwise encountered the joy of engaging with the outdoors on a bike. That may sound like one small part of Sun, but it's not small to our participants. Sun program offerings like ours make neighborhoods come alive in a new way, and outdoor recreation promotes healthy physical activity and mental health benefits, like self-confidence, for Portland's kids. Sun is a critical community connection and a connection to partners like NWTA to provide these opportunities. Abruptly removing these kinds of programs from our neighborhoods will undoubtedly hurt our communities. The city's own analysis found that cutting the Sun program would have a significant negative impact on equity goals, a negative impact on public health and community safety. As a parent, I'm not surprised that the analysis also suggests cutting Sun would increase the burden on working families. Despite all of this, cutting the Sun programs administered by PPNR is currently recommended. I urge the council to take a hard look on the impacts cutting the Sun program would have and to find an alternative way forward that preserves Portland's commitments to our kids and their families. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Councilors, Mayor Wilson, thank you for being here. I am Christopher Gustafson, testifying on my own behalf. I am a resident of District 3, Rose City Park neighborhood, and I am a renter. During my day job, I am the accounting lead, FA3, for the Portland Housing Bureau. In my spare time, I am the treasurer of the City of Portland Professional Workers Union. The primary thing that I'd like to speak about tonight is something that came up the other day in the Labor and Workforce Committee meeting, where the Northwest Labor Council was asked to testify. And it was actually a clarification, I believe, brought up by Councillor Novick, requesting a Lori Winner to elaborate on what her suggestion or what the working group suggestion was for usages of PSEF funds in order to alleviate the budget shortfall that we're seeing. And I'd like to emphasize that we were not suggesting that there should be great changes in PSEF, but in fact, our vision is that all of the employees of the City of Portland are working in climate resiliency, and that there are currently existing programs that PSEF funding could potentially support, and in particular, the general fund supported programs in the Parks Bureau. And so we would encourage the councilors to look creatively at ongoing programs in Parks Bureau, particularly things like invasive plant removal, the greenification of East Portland, and environmental education. Lastly, I would just encourage anyone who has the power to encourage BHR to settle the CPPW contract. Thank you very much.
Good evening, councilors, mayor. My name is Sven Werner. I'm a neighbor on the Montnoma neighborhood, and I'd like to speak about the parks. Parks save lives. Closing parks will decrease public safety. Parks provide places for little people or any people to learn how to swim, like life skills. Parks provide cooling places in the summer. Parks also are places for community, where community comes together. In 2023, that's the only data I could find, most recent, 79 people drowned in Oregon, many of them in Multnomah. Heat-related illnesses have increased. Studies show when you shut down or minimize access to public services, crime rates increase. I'd like to ask the council to reconsider not to close the parks, at least for a year. Give us a year and then let us, the public, help you to find additional funds to volunteering or raising, having events in those parks. Again, parks save lives. Thank you for your time.
And Scott Kohlbaugh, Thomas Gately, and Marianne Charette. And then after that, we'll have Alan Combs, Pooja Bhatt, and Sherry Morin, or Cheryl Morin.
Hi, I'm Scott Kohlbaugh, District 3 resident. I want to talk about why we are in this financial mess and the only way out. We are taxing people to death in Portland and causing our tax base to flee the city, resulting in this $93 million budget deficit and the potential loss of hundreds of jobs. While the current city council isn't entirely responsible, they do promise more of the same. Angelina Murillo spoke at a Tax the Rich rally just this past Saturday, but the reality is we're overtaxing people who can't afford the median home price in Portland or childcare for their families. I also want to be crystal clear to the senior citizens in the room. Angelina did support Measure 26-238, which would have created yet another tax for your 401ks, regardless of your income. Even today, regardless of their income, to pay for lawyers for anyone who is evicted for any reason. That isn't taxing the rich, it's taxing us all. Even today, Angelita and Tiffany continue to support similar proposal through their tenants' bill of rights. While our city faces this crisis and many others, Angelita continually focuses on Middle East politics and attacking Democrats in Teen Vogue magazine. Do your job and focus on solving problems in Portland. It's become clear to me that the ideology from District 3 city councilors only served to increase taxes, driving out more of our tax base and making this budget deficit even worse. Vote them out next year. Thank you.
Councillors, Mayor Wilson. My name is Thomas Gatley. I'm a district resident, macroeconomist. I own a gym, and I'm a founding member of the Kernside Business Association, representing more than 100 independent businesses in the district this evening. I want to add my voice to those before me to emphasize how important Ankeny Rainbow Road is to the prosperity and life of our neighborhood, and how important it is to residents and businesses alike to preserve the relatively small budget of the Public Street Plaza program, well under $1 million a year. Before I came to Portland, I lived in European and Chinese cities for 2 decades, and nothing is so central to the economic and social life of those joyful and eminently livable cities than the availability of shared, accessible public space. And Portlanders feel the same. A survey last year of 1,400 residents saw 96% support for this program. Portland, I think more than any other place in this country, has the opportunity to deliver on the promise of a vibrant, mixed-use, pedestrian and bike-friendly neighborhood so critical for both economic vitality and mental health. And this program is the tip of the spear in delivering on that promise. I urge you to support it.
And Marianne Schwab? Okay, we'll go with Alan Combs, Pooja Bhatt, and Cheryl Morin.
Hi. Thank you, councilors and mayor, for coming tonight. My name is Alan Combs. I've been a resident of District 3 now for 25 years. I'm fortunate to work at home and make time to do things that try to promote a more livable Portland. I'm here tonight to ask you to take a hard look at the Portland Clean Energy Fund and consider whether it is an appropriate source of revenue to fund city services that make Portland sustainable, safe, and resilient for the upcoming climate crisis. People have already talked about the PSEF. It's a 1% tax on revenues applied to large retailers. I and 65% of voters in Portland voted for it in 2018, but we were also told that it would collect $30 million a year. As it's already been mentioned, it's collected 5 or 6 times that amount and has amassed $650 million. I think the amount stockpile is around $500 million. Going forward, the average revenue is projected to be $200 million a year. I'm a renewable energy professional. In fact, my degree is in energy and resources. And if you want to do something cost-effective to reduce carbon emissions, you need to do 2 things. You need to get people out of their cars, and you need to make cities attractive compared to the suburbs. So I would ask you, how does the Clean Energy Fund revenues being stockpiled help marginalized communities if you don't have funding for effective 24/7 emergency services like police and fire? How does the Clean Energy Fund revenues being stockpiled help the most marginalized if you can't fund things like violent reduction programs like Ceasefire Portland? How are marginalized communities benefited if we don't have vibrant parks that create a place to go when the climate crisis hits severely? And I would also argue you need to use the Clean Energy Fund for emergency services or equipment. Things are going to get pretty tough in the city pretty fast. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Pooja Bhatt, and I am here as government relations, providing testimony for superintendents at Multnomah Education Service District, Reynolds School District, Park Grove School District, and David Douglas and Centennial School Districts. While we recognize as leaders of our own districts that the trade-offs that we face are always difficult in budget discussions, but the partnership that the districts have with the city of Portland is absolutely essential for students who are relying on us to leverage our collective resources effectively to ensure that the burden of budget decisions do not fall on our city's young people. In summary, we ask you to avoid any cuts to the Schools Uniting Neighborhoods Program, SUN, community schools, safe or safe routes to school. Now is not the time to add any uncertainty to reducing or eliminating these long-time programs. At the same time, we support the city administrator's recommendations for additions to supplement funding for the Office of Violence Prevention, including the ceasefire program. Both of these programs really impact community safety and the safety of young people in East Portland. So specifically with SUN, we understand that the city is contemplating the elimination of the SUN Community School Program, of which Portland Parks and Recreation has been a critical partner for decades. This nearly $3 million cut will close 11 SUN sites across four school districts and create a void of space, safe spaces for young people to gather and to be cared for across our districts. We really urge you to look at SUN and value this program that has had a long time impact on our communities. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Cheryl Morin. I am in part of District 3 representing the Arleta School community. The SUN program at Arleta School has been a consistent and stable resource students and families have depended on for many years. Cutting this program would be devastating socially, emotionally, and financially. As a Title I school, many of our families rely on SUN as a safe, supportive space for students to continue educational and interpersonal learning after school. SUN is a crucial resource to help close the education gap for our most vulnerable students. SUN is more than an after-school program at our school. It has many offerings that reduce the burden and stress for so many families, including a lifespan clothing closet, food pantry, toilet trees, and connects families to other resources and one another. The loss of this program would have harmful repercussions for our families in most need of these essential services. Our students at the Arleta SUN after-school program are provided many opportunities for holistic growth, from enhancing critical thinking to realizing the strength of collaborative efforts to building confidence. Our students benefit from the consistency SUN offers. Being fed supper in the after-school program meets the necessary physical need. Spending time with friends and being surrounded by caring adults meets an equally important social-emotional need. Without SUN, some students would return to empty homes with empty stomachs, have a higher probability of making poor and uninformed choices, or potentially get into trouble while parents are away at work trying to make ends meet. Please do everything you can to keep SUN at our schools. Thank you.
And now we'll take our online comment, Susan Lindsay, and then Catherine Mack, and then Walter Johnson. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi there. This is Susan Lindsay. I'm co-chair of the Buckman Community Association. However, I am speaking on my own behalf tonight. Thank you, Mayor Wilson and representatives from District 3 for holding this. I am quite concerned about the proposed cuts to the insurance for the neighborhood associations. The Buckman Community Association for the last 14 years has hosted a wonderful all-volunteer free event at Colonel Summers Park called the Buckman Picnic that where hundreds of people have come. It's really focused on children. From babies on up to age 10, we've got a bouncy house, we've got music, we get the little baby goats there, cotton candy, popcorn, lots of games, lots of activities. This is the kind of thing that we could not host if we didn't have any insurance through the neighborhood association, through the neighborhood coalition. So very concerned about that. And I'm also concerned about the cut to the small grants program, which has enabled many different startup groups to be able to put together really wonderful and creative projects that they wouldn't be able to do. So, you know, Portland is going to be based on its children. We have to support our children, our community centers, all the kind of programming for children. We have to make this city safe and attractive for families and children. So anything that we can do to make it so a place where people want to have kids and raise their kids, and I hope that we can do that. Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Catherine.
All right, can everyone hear me? My name's John. I'm signed into my coworker Catherine's Zoom account. Oops. My name's John Giacopi. I'm from the South Tabor neighborhood. And I'm the transportation and land use representative of the Southeast Uplift from my neighborhood association. And I'm asking you today for two things. I'm asking you, first and foremost, to please protect our street plazas program. People have already testified on behalf of this before you today, but I just want to reiterate their stories. These plazas are very important. I personally, like, you know, hang out a lot at Ankeny's Rainbow Road, and I would really like to see that preserved. And additionally, by removing the wear and tear of cars from streets, from these and other streets, we can reduce our overall maintenance costs long term. This is a program which allows us to save money going forward. We are investing wisely when we invest in the street plazas program. I'd like you to consider that. And when looking throughout the budget in general, considering what kind of investments would allow us to save money going forward, I think would be a good principle to hold. And then secondly, I would like us to seriously consider the issue of cost overruns of police overtime. Many of the highest paid officers within the Portland Police Bureau are not detectives or other management officers, but they are plainclothes officers, but, you know, just standard uniformed officers who get a large amount of staff overtime. This is perhaps due to recruiting issues. I'm not in the department. I cannot speak to this widely, but I'd really like to look at ways we can cap overtime to prevent these kind of overruns in the future, because it is costing us a lot of money. Thank you very much.
And Walter Johnson. Go ahead, Walter.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Walter Johnson. I am a community member in District 3 Richmond neighborhood. I am here to express my strong support for securing funding for the Portland Fire Chat Team. This program is vital for our community for that it frees up fire resources to focus on higher priority 911 calls, ultimately improving emergency response efforts across the city. When I was younger, several of my friends experienced overdoses, and I deeply wish that a program like the chat team had been available at that time. The support that the chat team provides, especially in assisting individuals with getting connected to proper clinics and resources, would have been invaluable in those moments. I urge you to consider the immense value that the Portland Fire Chat Team brings to both the community and our first responders. Thank you for your time.
Okay, and we'll take our next set of in-person comments. Scott Morris, Ray De La Haya, Anthony Presch, Sahan McKelvey, William Waters, Ryan Matau, Roy Reed, Anna Brown, and Tom Haig.
Hi board, my name is Scott Morris. I'm here with Portland Parks and Recreation, but I am speaking for myself. I'm a resident of Region 3, District 3, whatever the nomenclature is. I'm a carpenter for Portland Parks. I'm also the current locksmith for Portland Parks Recreation, the sole locksmith. So I keep the bathroom doors open. Just give you some insight into what I do. So as some of you may know, Parks is the number one source of restrooms for our unhoused population. So when people complain about feces on the street, we're the people that make sure that feces goes to the proper place. I'm going to keep it brief and just tell you this. I'd like to invite all of you to come to Mount Tabor Main and Shard anytime. I'm there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Come on down. Don't bring management with you. I'd like to show you around, show you what we do, have you meet the people that are actually keeping our parks open. You're hearing a lot of people here talk about how much they love parks. Parks is the heart of this city.
We're the hand of that heart that keeps that heart pumping. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Ray Della Aya. I work at Montevilla Community Center, and I'm coming here as a community member. I worked in this neighborhood for years. For 3 years while working at McDaniel High School, I worked with low-income migrant and single-parent family households. I made home visits all across this neighborhood and district and witnessed the ways they engaged in sun and parks activities. For some, the supper kids got at sun were the last meal of their day. And countless families relied on their food banks for groceries for the week. This neighborhood is one of the most diverse areas of our city. It's not a secret that our families of color and our working low-income families are getting priced out of their homes in the heart of the city and pushed further east. The vibrant communities programs that are proposed for funding cuts will affect these families the most. Our communities deserve a third space, whether that be sun or community centers. They deserve space where the whole family can be engaged. Where else are there activities and spaces for families from toddlers to seniors, programs where they can be engaged? These programs don't just provide classes, they provide care. They provide a low-cost fitness space for seniors, first aid for park goers, offers a space for unhoused neighbors to charge their electric wheelchairs. Where else can they do that? To charge their phones so they can get to shelters. Where else can they do that? For folks to get cool in the summer and warm in the winter. They also provide a safe space for folks to go to the bathroom, like my colleague said here. They also provide a space for a free and safe space for our youth to be healthily engaged, especially in areas where gang violence is prevalent. Our community centers provide space in the form of consistency, reliability, resource sharing, and compassion, things that spreadsheets and budgets could never capture. I plea and ask you to reconsider cutting our community centers and cuts to vibrant communities programs. Thank you.
Anthony Presch, Zahan McKelvey, and William Waters.
Hello, City Council Chairs and members of District 3. My name is Anthony Rest, and I live just east of the river. I work at a grocery store, like to walk my dog down the East Bank Esplanade, and on Saturdays, go to temple in the area and practice with other members of my religious community. I also suffer from mental health issues. I deal with this with medical professionals, but if I have an exceedingly dark day, I would not feel safe with several harshly armed officers kicking down my door. Portland Street Response is a necessary part of community engagement for dealing with mental health crises with proven results, lowering police overtime and thus saving us money. I do ask if the Portland police have time and money, if the Portland police have time and money to send groups of uniformed officers to two separate town halls, how is the Bureau that strapped for cash? No bureau should be protected from cuts while others face disproportionate slashes. The burden should be shared. Portland is what the community makes it. Thank you.
Good evening, councilors and Mayor Wilson. Thank you for being here to listen to all of this today. I know this is not always easy, but I appreciate it. My name is Sahan McKelvey. I am Director of Advocacy and Engagement at SEI Self-Enhancement, Inc. And our agency operates extensively in Districts 1, 2, and 3. But we don't get a whole lot of funding from the city. So I'm not here speaking about how I can protect funding from my agency. I'm here to speak about how we can protect funding that impacts the community that my agency represents. As we look at the state that we're in right now, I think that we could all agree on the fact that investing in our future, investing in our young people is the key to increasing our overall community health and getting us to a place where we want our city to be. But when I look at proposed cuts of $23 million to Parks and Rec, I wonder if we're forgetting that. And I know that we are in very difficult times, and I know that you all are making very difficult decisions as we look at this budget and what we're going to put forward. But I would just ask that as we are making decisions around life-changing services that maintain our current quality of life, that we don't look at that and feel like investing in our future is then expendable. Please put the same amount of weight on investing in our future, our young people, through programs that Parks and Rec provide that create first-time experiences, often first jobs for a lot of our people, for a lot of our young people, and give that the same weight as we're giving the decisions that we have to make to maintain current services. Thank you.
My name is William Waters. Thank you, City Council, Mayor Wilson, Chief Day, I see you in the back. Our city's facing some serious situations right now. It's grown stupendously in the last 20 years, and we've outgrown ourselves, quite frankly. I have been here for 44 years. I remember the Police Activity League up the road. My kids all went to Sun School. In the recent past, my 19-year-old had to have a bulletproof backpack liner to take the bus to David Douglas High School. My oldest daughter lives on the street. She's 27 years old. She just stole a car last week. She is now in Clackamas County Jail for manslaughter because her passenger died in the accident. I would like to say that our homeless situation is a redundant process. When I'm driving down the road and I'm hitting all these potholes and we're starting to cycle them back and forth to wherever they are, it's a hole that needs to be plugged. These people need basically an ultimatum. You know, either do this or do that, because we need to figure out where it's all going and, you know, go pre-pandemic and start back from there. You know, I know there was a lot of money that came from that, but like, our streets never used to be like this. For those that are new here, welcome to one of the most beautiful places in the United States. You know, this is my home, but, you know, self-employed, owning a home, I'm about to be taxed out of here too. You know, I love it here. I don't want to go. But our circumstances are grave, and I hope we can find the solution.
Ryan Mutto, Roy Reed, and Anna Brown.
Hi, I just want to say I'm really excited to greet my city councilors from District 3 here and the rest of the council and the mayor. My name is Ryan Mattau. I'm a resident of the Sunnyside neighborhood. I'm here as a personal citizen. I see a lot of like-minded people, though, supporting neighborhood efforts, Sun Schools, parks and plazas, climate resilience, and bikes as a primary form of transportation for all the reasons that have been said tonight. I know that you have a lot of difficult decisions in front of you. I'm not here to advocate for a specific program, but instead a focus on people, really to focus first on people. The people are the people who are living without or in insecure housing, the people who are dying in traffic violence, the people who rely on services such as camps and community centers in our schools. And the investments that we choose to make now in the toughest of times will truly show who we are as a community, as a city. And we need to be thinking about those people.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Rory Reed. I live over in Cully. I work down at for Portland Parks and Rec over at the Mount Tabor Maintenance Yard. And this is great. It's great to have a new system where this happens. I want to make a case for my labor union, specifically for 483 rank and file. And I want to make a semi-adversarial competitive case for them. I'm saying I'm not sure where you need to cut, but I don't think you actually do need to cut at 483. Very simply, 483 is actually the front line. If there's a class system for city employees, well, we're not at the top of it. These are utility workers who drive our trucks. They're utility workers at parks who clear brush. They're park techs who literally empty trash cans. They're the ones who get to go clean the actual bathrooms. Our rec staff, these are the people in the community centers actually interacting with the public. If you cut us, people are gonna know it. So I'm almost out of time, which is probably for the best. I want to say that over the last 5 years, we picked up something like 18 analysts in the office. We picked up 51 coordinators. We picked up 7 managers. We picked up about 25 supervisors. Who are we cutting? We're cutting 8 out of the 14 utility workers. We're cutting 18 rec staff on top of the 19 that we lost in the last 5 years. We're cutting 6 maintenance staff. I'm talking carpenters, painters, the people that clean gutters. And I'm talking 3 park techs. You know, Rory, we hired a lot of people in the last couple.
Thank you for your comments. We're at time.
Hi, my name is Anna Brown. Thanks for being here tonight. I'm speaking as a District 3 community member and renter in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood, and I'm a member of the City of Portland Professional Workers Union. I work for Vibrant Community Service Areas, primarily with Parks and Recreation, doing community engagement, and this work is vital to community safety and well-being. If you've ever been to Arrow Heights, I helped lead the opening and engagement there, and my team has done robust engagement throughout the project's lifespan, which included leading a diverse public advisory committee to ensure all community members were represented and heard. This is just one example of how our team helps to make positive changes across the organization and to amplify the voices that have been historically left out. Because of mismanagement over the last couple of years, we have been feeling the effects of these cuts and organization changes, along with the effects of funding sources being tied to SDCs. Like so many have spoken to tonight, the programs and partnerships that serve our communities will continue to feel the pressure of these cuts. City infrastructure like community, like communications and community engagement are critical to Portlanders. Bureaus and programs cannot get information out to Portland and hear from Portlanders without us. It's crucial that the middle management and administrative bloat is addressed and funds are allocated to programming, partnerships, operations and maintenance, and our future generations. The city must invest in the workers that provide these essential services to the most impacted in this district and all Portlanders. And lastly, I request that you encourage the city bargaining team to settle our contract.
So we're going to take Mary Ann Schwab in the room and Tom Haig.
My name is Marianne Schwab. I live in the Sunnyside neighborhood. I'm now 81 years old and I'm losing patience. We've lost our antiquated Jim Crow commission form of government, and now I have to face 12 city commissioners to get something done. And when I look at the budget at Southeast Uplift, I can't believe it. We have no insurance. What if I trip on a sidewalk? What if somebody falls down from a chandelier? We need insurance when we have citizens going out working to help the city, make our city better. I want Portland, Portland again, people helping people. Whether you're getting on the bus and they try to help me figure out whatever that chair is that I get to sit down with my walker, that's Portland, people helping people. I live one block from Lorehurst Playground Park. You have no idea what's happened to your park. And did you know it's not finished? It's been put together way back when, in the 20s, we have not finished that park. I worked with 5 neighborhoods on that when Jimmy Carter was elected president. At the same time, I worked trying to get support for the Washington High School Community Center for Inner Southeast. There's no money. Had it not been for Amanda Fritz, we still wouldn't have any parks fixed. And what happened? Somehow, parks was used as petty cash. Petty cash. We paid a lot of golf. Boy, did we play a lot of golf. And you had a lot of business picnics at Lorehurst Park. But there hasn't been one picnic since Jimmy Carter was there because they took our kitchen away. And the man that had us gave us $750,000. We did a lot of park for the children's park. But what we did not do is put the kitchen up where it was closer to the park.
those dollars disappeared. We still, even the park representative who was helping us on that committee, she didn't know what happened to those dollars.
Marianne, thank you
for your comments.
I am
angry and I really support, let's work together to get these 12 commissioners not to fight over 2 pence and let's finish a job. I'm going to live to be 107 and I want to jump in that pool. Thank you very much.
Hello, counselors and Mayor Wilson. I'm going to tell you a quick story that I think is both unique and universal. Ever since I've been a kid, I trained really hard to be a great athlete. I was able to perform or compete both as an able, internationally as both an able body and disabled athlete. But 6 years ago, I did my rotator cuff and it was over and it put me in a deep, deep funk. About 6 months ago, I got an email from Portland Parks and Rec Sports saying they were looking for referees for their golden ball basketball program. And I decided I'm going to give it a shot. So I went there and went to the first training camp, and I was met by a group of managers who did not at all shun the idea. They thought it was great. They were going to do everything they could to get me on the court. 6 months later and 30 games later, I just finished the first wheelchair referee season in the 87-year history of the Portland Golden Ball League. But like I say, this is not a unique story. Portland sports, Parks and Rec sports, have supported hundreds of thousands of kids over the year and adults, and it is a safety net for the community. These are the kids that don't have $2,000 to be on the traveling team. These are the kids who get cut from their grade school basketball team. These are the real ex-athletes who have nothing else to do but try to be a referee. This is a safety net for the community, and if you cut that safety net, the community is going to bleed. Thank you.
And now we'll take our next 3 online comments. Tiffany Blackman, Karen Shearer, and Hannah Wallace. Go ahead, Tiffany.
Thank you. My name is Tiffany Blackman. I am the parent of a kindergartner and a third grade student at our Arleta Elementary, where we face our SUN program being cut. Our children have also taken multiple classes at Montevilla Community Center, which also faces closure. I grew up in Portland, and as a low-income student in Portland Public Schools, programs like free and low-cost programming at community centers and after-school programs provided critical services for myself and my family that enabled me to have a safe place to be and to achieve academic success. I want to see my children have that same opportunity and all of the other children in the SUN programs facing closure. The performance and equity gaps between low-income students and BIPOC students and higher income and white counterparts remain today, and programs like SUN are critical to strive to close that gap. Our third grader wanted to share some of the key reasons he hopes that the SUN program will be saved. He said that he wants you to know that there are so many opportunities for students to choose so many fun things to learn, like chess, the Black Student Union, art, and many other things. He said he loves Miss Raina, Rowan, and the other SUN staff, and that he hopes that you will save SUN for himself and all of the other Arleta students. And quickly, as General Counsel for Cascadia Health, I also hope that you can prioritize the funds for Portland Street Response. Thank you.
Karen Shearer. Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so my name is Karen Shearer, resident of District 3 and business owner in District 4 and a member of Stadiumhood. More taxes are not the answer. As we all know, the root cause of the revenue shortfall lies in the alarming trend of businesses and residents leaving our city. Families are relocating to areas that promise better opportunities, lower taxes, and improved quality of life. small businesses, once the backbone of our community, are closing their doors or moving elsewhere, taking with them jobs and vital revenue that our city desperately needs. In light of the situation, I urge the city government to prioritize the needs of taxpayers. It is essential that we focus our resources on creating an environment that attracts businesses and retains residents. While it is important to some to support our homeless and those struggling with addiction, we must not forget that the core responsibility of our government is to serve the taxpayers who contribute to our city's revenue. We need to invest in initiatives that promote economic growth, enhance public safety, and improve our infrastructure. We should use the $580 million clean energy monies now, or we won't have anyone left in the city to spend this money on in the future. Safety and livability is a priority right now. Let us not allow the budget deficit to become an insurmountable obstacle. Together, we can forge a path towards prioritizing the hardworking taxpayers who call the city home. Thank you.
And Hannah Wallace. Go ahead, Hannah. You can unmute, Hannah.
So sorry. Hi, my name is Hannah Wallace, and I'm the vice president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association in District 3. In early 2021, our neighborhood association founded the Sunnyside Shower Project, which offers showers to over 100 of our houseless neighbors each year. In addition to offering our guests hot showers, clean clothes, laundry cards, medical supplies, and Narcan, we also connect them with important services they need, like identification, detox services, and placement in housing. What we've seen is that by virtue of having access to a shower and clean clothes, our guests have a renewed self-esteem that helps them take meaningful steps towards changing their lives. In our first 2 years, we relied on funding from our district coalition office, Southeast Uplift, via their wonderful community grants program. We were awarded a small amount, $5,000, in both 2022 and then 2023, which allowed us to continue offering these vital services for our most vulnerable neighbors. These small but critical grants help organizations like ours, and there are dozens more in each district, build steam and grow and get future larger grants from private foundations. So I'm asking you to rethink the cuts to the Office of Civic Life, which funnel out to the four district coalition offices for both the community grants program and the insurance that allows us to operate in the Sunnyside Methodist Church. Thank you. And also please do fund Portland Street Response.
And now we'll take our next 9 in-person comments. TJ Browning, Tori Maurer, Nate Spicer, Suen Ho, Anna Goodman, Suzanne Dixon, Jill McCutcheon, Wendy Yang, and Aaron Milano.
Good evening. I came here prepared to advocate for police, PMO, and parks. And instead, I'm overwhelmed with sadness, frankly. Proposals like parks instead of programs, street plazas, closing sun schools, eliminating good programs completely. This can't be the solution. We can't use a chainsaw and just cut huge things out of our daily lives. We're watching that chainsaw process going on at the national level, and I'll tell you, it's not going well. We need a scalpel. We need to go through all this with a very fine eye. Listen, I know this isn't going to be popular, but could we all do our programs for just a little less? Can we keep street plazas for a little less? Can we do park maintenance for a little less? I know Portland. People care about this city. They're going to step up and they're going to help. But they can't replace an entire program. Pitting neighbor against neighbor, eliminating entire programs, it makes me sad for Portland. All programs that we're advocating for, can we just do it with a little less. Pain should be shared equally, and trust me, small wounds heal a lot quicker than deep ones. Thank you, Steve Novick. Thank you, Commissioner Zimmerman, for taking that attitude when you were the only two votes against enlarging city council staff at a time of budget shortage.
Hi, my name is Tori Maurer, and I'm here to speak about the cuts in vibrant communities specifically. I've read through all of the specific cuts, and my perception is that the city administration and upper management is trying to protect their large salaries by threatening service cuts to community centers and park cleanliness. And all of this is in an effort to get the public to improve or to approve an increased levy. I do not believe that voters should be forced into a crossroad like this by having to choose between essential community programs and a tax increase. I urge you city council folks to consider cutting from administration, management, and analysts as opposed to closing community centers, laying off essential workers, and reducing basic services in our parks. Please do what's right for our community. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nate Spicer. I'm the maintenance mechanic for the fountains, but I'm here on behalf of myself as a father, as a District 3 resident. A lot of what's been said here, I don't need to say it again. I just want to challenge you guys to do something about it. Let's make a difference. When Ira Keller was broken last year, the Water Bureau found thousands of dollars for a new pump and motor. Find thousands of dollars. Use the Clean Energy Fund. You guys can do this. I appreciate your time. And I'm here as a father, and I just wish that we didn't have to put our children and the young people and the underserved people of our community as this ploy or whatever it is for the levy or what it might be. But thank you. I appreciate your time.
Duane Ho, Anna Goodman, and Suzanne Dixon.
Good evening. My name is Swen Ho, and I am serving on the Parks Board. And I live in District 3, and I want to say that I am so impressed with the parks. 30 years ago, I came from around the world, all over the place, including New York City, came here, I stayed, because you have an incredible park system. It was so impressive. I want to make sure that we understand that we all love our parks. And the parks staff, it's incredibly frugal, creative, humorous, hardworking. The hard work, we don't see them doing the hard work, but yet we see the result of beautiful parks that's well-maintained and it's taken care of. So be very compassionate. Do not cut anyone who is really doing the hard work behind us, supporting us, and make us feel like we are home in our wonderful little backyard. And we know how hard it is to just even take care of our little pot of plants. So kudos to all the park staff. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Suzanne Dixon, and I'm here as a resident of District 3. And I just wanted to speak on behalf of maintaining the public plaza spaces. According to the city's own data, plazas receive strong support, with 96% of surveyed respondents recognizing substantial community benefits and 97% agreeing that plazas enhance safety and vibrancy, which is an 8% increase over 2023. In 2024, more than 250 community-led events were hosted in the plazas. I think this is an incredibly important part of our community to maintain and keep these plazas. It's a low-cost program to run. And I think that cutting the plazas is a big mistake. And I hope you will take that seriously and consider it as something that you would preserve going forward. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna Goodman. I'm a parent and resident of District 3 in the Woodstock neighborhood. And I just wanted to add my voice to the side of public programming above policing or other things that people are bringing to your attention. I think there's so much to the idea that our spaces need to be active. And that's one of the things that's going to bring safety and help to achieve our equity goals. And so I just wanted to specifically mention the youth sports office. They're in charge of Golden Ball. And I wanted to mention the 5K run series that happens in the summertime in Portland parks that no one has mentioned yet. And the reason I wanted to mention that specifically is because it's affordable. It's low barrier. If you go there, you will see people of all income levels, all races, all body types. It's something where if you think about losing it, which is on the table, it means that there's a privatization of something that should be a public good, which is access to community health. And wellness, and to use our parks in a way. And so that's the thing that I think I really want you all to think about, is that when we cut the community programming, it means that the access to the exact same things are available only to our most, the people who already have the means to have them. Thank you.
Jill McCutcheon, Wendy Yang, and Erin Milano.
Good evening. My name is Wendy Yang, and I am a resident of District 3. Thank you, Mayor Wilson and councilors, for holding these listening sessions. I also want to speak about the importance of protecting the PBOT Street Plaza program. When we cut programs that create welcoming, vibrant places like street plazas, public gathering spaces, and community-driven placemaking initiatives, we don't just lose amenities. We lose what makes Portland a city people want to visit, live in, and invest in. Street plazas and public spaces aren't just about aesthetics. By providing joyful and accessible places where people linger, they drive economic activity, empower communities, reduce crime, and improve our health. When people feel invited to linger in a space, they visit local businesses, spend money, and strengthen our city's economy. And when people, residents, schools, neighborhood associations, businesses, and community organizations are invited to design street spaces, it empowers communities, increases joy, reduces home turnover, and promotes ongoing stewardship of our spaces. As the originator of street paintings and free libraries, Portland has long been known for its creative, people-centered spaces. If we strip that away, we risk losing what makes our city unique. Instead of viewing placemaking and street plazas as an expense, we should recognize it as an investment, one that pays off through increased business revenue, stronger communities, and a city people are proud to call home, the PBOT Street Plazas program.
Hey, my name is Aaron Milano. I live here in District 3 with my family. Public safety, streets, and municipal infrastructure like parks are my top priority. If we can't get the basics right, we shouldn't be in the business of creating new programs. I have two areas of particular interest. One, administrative efficiency. I spent way too much time this week trying to navigate across the Bureau's org charts. There are too many overlapping functions across city divisions, and the org chart is way too deep. Flatten it so that staff can spend less time in meetings and more time creating outcomes for constituents. You should leverage the new government structure now to reduce administrative overhead to maximize the effectiveness of the dollars we have to make it easier for citizens to find the resources that are available. Number two is PSEF. We should use the dollars. During this budget crisis, it is not prudent to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on new programs like a $20 million e-bike program. All dollars should be used to address one of our many local crises and attract new businesses to Portland. We can do so while maintaining fidelity to climate goals, PSEV funds could support road repairs that improve fuel efficiency for vehicles that use them and reduce microplastic emissions, accelerating housing development by funding and accelerating permit reviews for efficient projects, or park maintenance and fire prevention to avoid catastrophic climate impacts. Thank you all for being here. Really appreciate you making the time.
Jill McCutcheon. Okay, we'll go to our next three online folks. Stacy Brewster, Anna Cox, and then Taylor Ford. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hey there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi there.
Yes.
Hello, counselors, hello, mayor. From those attending at the webinar, we can't see anybody on the dais, so there's probably more people to thank. I do want to do a big shout out to the ASL interpreters that have been working so diligently to make this entire meeting accessible for people with disabilities. Thank you. My name is Stacy Brewster. I'm a longtime resident of the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood in District 3 and a proud city worker since 2008. First as a staffer in City Hall and now as a coordinator at the Portland Bureau of Transportation, focused on communications. I'm also a member of the City of Portland Professional Workers Union, or CPPW, which, as you may know, is currently in mediation with the city to settle our first contract. You are all here because you know that the heart of the city is its people, its neighborhoods, our local small businesses, and all the public spaces that connect us. So too, at the heart of this budget should be the people that do the people's business. You've already heard tonight some of the reasons city workers are under incredible stress right now. Pair that with the broad attacks against public employees and marginalized communities at the national level, and you can see why some of us are incredibly disturbed by the city administrator's budget documents. They're wrong. The survey exercise that you were asked to fill out tonight is wrong. Presenting these false choices that we have. So just my ask for city council is to please get your bargaining team to settle the CPPW contract and create a people's budget based on the people we serve and the city workers that do the people's business. Thank you.
Anna Cox. Let's go to Taylor Ford. It looks like Anna put her hand down.
Hello, can you hear me?
Go ahead, Taylor.
Yes. Good evening. I just want to say thank you, Mayor Wilson and our councilman here before me. I don't mean to regurgitate a lot of the themes that have already been said earlier this evening. With the proposed budget cuts to possibly shut down some of the community centers within the city, you know, with me being a resident of District 3 and also living in Portland all my life, I just want to say, you know, these aren't just social gathering spaces for youth to just congregate and just mess around and hang out. These are literally integral parts of the community and safety nets for what make up Portland, you know, the wraparound services that they provide, you know, the recreational programming, preschool programming. These are essential needs that people, especially BIPOC community members, need to get by day in and day out. If Portland is the city that works, then we need people on the ground who can work for people within the city. So I'll just strongly urge you to find other ways to help close the gap within the budget cuts or pull from other revenue streams. You know, just being someone who's seen the progression of this city, I know that the youth within the city have a lot of strong promise, but we need support systems and resources to help them as well. You know, without these spaces, there are a lot of things that, you know, folks can get into, and, you know, they're not always positive avenues. And these provide community spaces for relationship building and also just progression and self-development as well. Thank you.
And Anna Cox.
Hi, thank you for letting me speak.
My name is Anna Cox. I'm a parent at Lane Middle School and the president of our PTA at Lane Middle School. And I wanted to speak about the proposed budget cuts that are affecting all of the SUN programs that are operated by the city of Portland, including the one at our school. Our SUN program at Lane provides vital services. This includes a food bank and after-school programs that keep our kids engaged, supported, and on track. For instance, several of our students are maintaining their grades at Lane because they are participating in SUN tutoring so that they can play SUN sports. Others are learning activities like acting, sewing, and cooking. Our SUN staff know our students by name. They know where their family, what their family lives are like, and they work to provide them resources like clothing, rent assistance, and food. Middle school is such a pivotal time for kids, and without programs like SUN, we know our students will find their own activities that are less safe and healthy. And I think we can all remember what happened during the pandemic when we didn't have a lot of in-school classes. And we had a lot of middle schoolers involved on the news with crimes. So losing our SUN program would be devastating. So is that my time up? Good? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
In our next set of in-person comments, Saskia Dressler, Andy Chiller, Ian Barreto, Peter Zoltansky, Lisa Hawking, Steve Manos, Daniel Marsh, and Rachel Phillips, and Spencer Trum. Saskia Dressler, Andy Chiller, and Ian Barreto are first.
Hi, good evening. My name is Saskia Dressler. I'm a resident of the Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association. And Mayor Wilson and the councilors, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. I want to take us all back to Portland in the 90s. When it seemed like almost anything was possible. Maybe it didn't rain as much, I'm not sure. But Portland was known worldwide for our commitment to livability and the sustainability practices that we were building our city's practices upon. Portland was not perfect. There's a lot about Portland that has shifted as we have had a greater awareness to the inequities and the effects of redlining and the just horrible effects of racism in the founding of our state and the impacts on so many people. But what I want to bring us back to in that we were talking about in the 90s is talking about sustainability as a convergence of a commitment to a thriving social and environmental convergence, for lack of a better term. Right now, we're just talking about economic choices and impacts on people. We have a huge resource because of maybe those commitments back in the 90s of the Clean Energy Fund that I think could be put to so many uses to meet those economic areas that we are talking about cutting and supporting people. So I really urge you to look there for some answers, to think more holistically, and to remember where Portland has come from, but also where it can go if we all work together.
Mayor and councilors, hello, my name is Andy Chiller, and I'm a parent of a second grader at Arleta Elementary School in Mount Scott, Arleta. And I'm here to strenuously request that the funding for the SUN Community School program not be cut. Rather than spending my time talking about how my own child has been greatly enriched by participating in the program, I thought I would use my time, it would be more worthwhile to advocate for the significant number of families in our school for whom the SUN program is not a luxury, but a lifeline. who would not be able to afford the thousands of dollars it costs for after-school care or summer programming, or whose children would not experience the enrichment programs and the academic support that the SUN program provides. Residents of this community, your constituents, have consistently voted for more educational support for our youth, for the additional taxes, for universal pre-K, to the bonds to support PPS. The message is loud and clear. We need to fully fund and support educational opportunities for all Portlanders, and the SUN program is an integral part of that. I don't have time to cite all the studies showing the importance of these type of programs for traditionally underserved populations and the successes they have in improving those outcomes, but I'm begging you to do the research and look into that yourselves before you make these cuts. I don't envy the hard choices you have in this budgetary cycle, but removing funding from programs that support our youth would be extremely short-sighted, and it would be tantamount to stealing from our future to satisfy a short-term goal. Thank you.
Ian Barreto, Peter Zoltansky, Lisa Hawking. Back to that.
Awesome. Hello. My name is Ian Barreto. I use he or they pronouns. I'm a local resident in District 3, and I'm also the program manager for the Sexual and Gender Minority Youth Resource Center. However, today I'm speaking on my behalf and the behalf of my family. Due to the ending of the Parks levy and the subsequent cuts to PPR-funded programs and the proposed cuts to the Sun Schools program, the Sexual and Gender Minority Youth Resource Center is currently facing a total loss of funding. This organization has relied on community support for funding for nearly three decades, and the only community resource for members of the LGBTQIA2S+ community under 18 years of age in Multnomah County. Over the years, this program has supported thousands of queer young Portlanders, resourced and unhoused. 94% of SMERC-engaged youth report an increase in community engagement, reduction of risk behavior, namely suicidal ideation. This program is really important to our community, and I urge the city to maintain supportive services that enable the life-saving work of supporting young LGBTQIA2S+ folks in our community. Over 40% of unhoused youth in Portland are members of the queer community, compared to the roughly 12% of the general population. This is a clear example of how supporting queer youth is supporting some of the most multi-marginalized community members in Portland. It is a point of pride that I live in one of the safest cities to be a member of the LGBTQIA2S+ community. Please uphold this tradition and make sure that the safe spaces for our young queer community members are maintained during a time when so many are being displaced and cast out of other cities across this country.
Hi, my name is Lisa Hawking. I'm the proud principal at Arleta Elementary School in District 3. I'm here tonight to ask you to center children in your budgeting process. All children, and tonight, a special cohort of children who are served by Sun School throughout Portland Parks. And within that cohort, our Arleta Elementary kindergarten through fifth grade children and students. The degree of specificity combined with the amount of love that you hear in the words of our Arleta petition, written by Arleta parents with years of connection to Sun programming and staff at Arleta, is only possible after many, many positive, meaningful experiences. Our school serves 260 students, and at 3 p.m. today, our petition had 248 signatures. As Arleta principal, I'm so fortunate to get to see many, many daily interactions between our kids and Sun staff during after-school programming as it begins, unfolds, and ends. Students talking about their school day together and having snack, walking together in small groups to their classes, gathered around a table with their staff member looking at their in-process project during photography class, rushing to pick parents, students, Sun, and Arleta staff all working on agreements together with a student, parents rushing to pick their child up in a hurry with stress on their faces in one direction, then relaxed and smiling as they walk the same path the other direction past my office window to head home together. Our students bring so much love, so much effort, so much hope, and they carry a lot of weight on their shoulders these days as they work hard to learn, grow, and succeed during these complex times. I know you face hard choices in deciding what to cut in order to make your budget work, but please find something other than our precious children who are already working so hard to learn, grow, and succeed during these complex times. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Pete Zoltansky, Carpenter, District 3 resident, Parks and Recreation Carpenter Maintenance. And yeah, I just wanted to say that the other day I was doing a concrete installation at one of the community centers, and I rolled up and there was quite a bit of trash in the roadway in front of the community center. And, you know, people were just driving around it and everything. And I saw it and I'm like, well, you know, all right, I got some trash cans and brooms, and it was a lot of traffic and everything. And I asked one of my coworkers, Jane, to assist. And, you know, she's like, yeah, I'll do it. So we got out there, we had our safety gear on and stuff. And there were people from businesses, residents or whatever, already picking it up. And they were actually fairly happy to see people with trash cans and safety gear show up and like get stuff done. And we didn't have meetings about it or whatever. We just like made it happen. And I found out after that, my coworker is one of the people that's on the cut list and, you know, super highly skilled horticulturalist, arborist, all of it. And I wanted to say too, another thing I remember, the community centers, it's parks and recreation, not parks or recreation. You know, doing maintenance work there, and you see, you know, there will be a mom showing up with kids signing up for programs wearing like Taco Bell uniform, getting off shift or whatever. And it's like, it's, you know, that's the service that we're doing. It reminds me like why we do what we do is to provide access to these programs. So that's it. Thanks.
Steve Manos, Daniel March, and Rachel Phillips, and Spencer Trum.
Good evening, council members. Thank you for coming. Good evening, Mayor. My name is Steve Manos, and I am a resident of District 3, but more importantly, I'm an EMT with the Community Health Assess and Treat Program. I see from the nods you're familiar with the program. Just wanted to give you a little perspective of it from somebody who is actually on the emergency response side of it. So there are two sides of it. One is the emergency response, and one is the follow-up team. We call them the aftercare team. And the emergency response, our primary objective is, of course, to treat the patients that we see. But one of those things we do in the assessment is we determine whether they need to be transported, whether they're appropriate to go to the emergency department, whether we can treat them on site, or whether we can find ways to divert them to other ways that they can get care. Just yesterday, we had an instance where we were able to divert somebody who otherwise would have ridden an ambulance and gone to an emergency department just because they needed medication at their care facility. We know that save the public probably a few thousand dollars at least with that one call alone, and that happens every day. So I wanted to give you an idea of what happens there. Also, we do, when we make first contact with citizens, we a lot of times transfer them over to the aftercare side where they can have access then to the services that Portland offers as well. Thank you for your time.
Hello, my name's Daniel. I live in District 3. I work for Portland Parks and Rec as a turf maintenance technician, and I'm also a shop steward for our union. Not everything I share, well, a lot of this is personal opinions, so I think we have the best council members here. It's in number 3. I love you all. You're so great. Thank you. Thank the public for like coming out and supporting parks. Like, we do feel the love, and it's so great as well. Sun school seems like an obvious, like, why would we get rid of that? And I love the lots of things that we do. I'm not happy with how things have been presented to parks and the employees. It kind of seems like we're trying to get pitted against each other and say, take the cut somewhere else. I would encourage our council members to reach out to the unions and maybe ask if you can attend our meetings. I know you have a very busy schedule, but we would love to see you all because we are the people on the ground. And please hurry up and get CPPW their contract. I can't be a union member and not stick up for those people. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rachel Phillips. I live in District 3, and I thank you all for the opportunity for feedback. I am a criminal defense attorney. I was a public defender in downtown Portland for 8.5 years, and now I am in private practice. I represent criminal defendants and crime victims. And I want to talk about the part of the budget where I think you can slash more. For example, Portland Police Department's clearance rate for property crime has plummeted from 17% in 2009 to under 5% in 2021. I don't know any other job or line of work where you can have that kind of a lack of results and not only demand more money to your budget every year, but get it. What are we doing? Not to mention the fact that we are constantly paying out for unlawful use of force. The most recent was $938,000. If they are so short-staffed, what are they doing showing up in uniform to intimidate council members? Furthermore, since January, there's a January 31st report, crime is trending down. It's trending down. So why do we need more police? I urge you, invest in the programs that keep people out of the criminal justice system in the first place. Thank you so much for your time.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Portland City Council, hello. For the record, my name is Spencer Trum, and I live in inner southeast Portland in the Sunnyside neighborhood, and these opinions are my own. I am asking folks as you prepare budgets to follow this principle. No cuts to things that make life easier and better for poor and working people. That means no cuts to SUN, because like it or not, our schools are places that are more than just places where kids go to learn. They provide childcare and wraparound services and things that make family raising possible. Don't take your cuts out on city workers either, please, because these people work hard. Shout out to the folks who clean our parks and run our water treatment plants. PSEF is already spent, don't mess with it, because things like urban canopy aren't just about making the city pretty, it keeps our neighborhoods safe and cool in heat waves. Now, how about some two cut? Downtown Portland clean and safe, I'll tell you. Last time I was downtown on March the 1st, I was trying to find a phone that I dropped in my car, and basically for driving a car that maybe looked a little bit too much like a beater and rustling around in my car seat, I saw these folks just kind of gawking at me. And I thought, well, come on, do I not have the right to park near a Nordstrom just because my car is kind of ugly? Sorry. Well, here's the thing. These cuts sometimes present us with a false choice. We really ought to look more into taxing vacancy, the folks who are actually hollowing out the city, the folks who are holding on to space instead of actually renting it out to businesses and people. Thank you.
Now we'll take our next online comments, Naomi and Sarah. Go ahead, Naomi. I think you're muted.
I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
We're all good? Okay. Hi, I'm Sarah Chellis, and I grew up and live in North Portland, and I work for Portland Parks as an adaptive inclusive recreation aide and social emotional support. Currently, I'm at Sitton Elementary School, but also sometimes work at Charles Jordan Community Center. We basically go where we're needed. What I do is essentially provide support so that students of all abilities are able to access all parks programs without discrimination. I do a lot of emotion support, emotion regulation support. These kids really need it. To be specific, one of my biggest struggles this term has been trying to teach kids how to stand up for themselves without resorting to violence. It's very hard to be a kid, and this has been one of the hardest jobs I've ever had, but my coworkers are incredible. Together, we feed and clothe our students, provide engaging activities that challenge kids in fun ways and safe ways, provide a safe space for kids to grow emotionally and socially, help kids with their homework, provide support for learning conflict resolution skills, provide emotional support for kids going through difficult hardships, provide care and supervision so parents can work, feed families in the neighborhood in partnership with the Oregon Food Bank, connect families with resources they might need to thrive in our community. We always have a wait list, and often our waitlisted students go to the program at St. John's Community Center. My disabled aunt participates in the community center senior services and thrives. cutting Sensible and Community Center programs would completely cut off access to crucial community resources and safe spaces for those people who are not considered profitable by privately owned services. Thank you.
And with no more raised hands online, we'll take the next set of nine in the room. Michelle Levine, Husseini Leiji, and I apologize for that pronunciation. That was her. Sarah just spoke, yeah. Eva Melenders, Heather Flint Chado, Kevin Machiz, Jean-Paul Draculakis, Tyler Fellini, Marianne Tybalt, and Elizabeth Doerr. You can go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor Wilson and councilors, for the opportunity to participate in this public forum. I am Michelle Lavinia, a city employee and a nurse with the Portland Fire and Rescue CHAT program. I recognize that you're faced with very difficult decisions, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts. The Community Health Assess and Treat program was created to meet this community's need to send the right responder to the surging, non-urgent 911 calls and overdose calls. It was also created to be an efficiency for this city's public safety service area and EMS system. It is more cost-effective to send a two-person response unit to non-urgent medical calls at the 911 period. And at the 911 call, CHAT teams provide real access to life-saving medication for opioid use disorder, also known as buprenorphine and Suboxone. Evidence-based medical science proves that individuals who start taking this medication are less likely to die from overdose. Our team provides this medication and connects individuals to real linkages with treatment and shelter. We also follow up with individuals the next day to build trust and keep people connected to services and improve overall health and wellness. With potential federal cuts to Medicaid, a program like CHAT will be essential to connect community members to much needed services rather than leaving them sit in their local emergency room for hours and hours without real connections to the right services. CHAT works behind the scenes with all public safety service area bureaus and programs to make real differences for everyone in our community.
And Husseini Leiji, is that? And Eve Melenders, okay. Heather Flint Chado, Kevin Machiz, and Jean-Paul Draculakis.
I'm Kevin Machiz. I have a proposal to save the city of Portland $2 billion. Imagine for a moment that someone came in and told you that you would need to save $2 billion. What policies come to mind? Perhaps savage cuts to beloved city programs and massive layoffs to city employees. My proposal achieves all of its cost savings without cutting a single program or laying off a single employee. I propose that the city study and adopt a comprehensive actuarial funding policy for the Portland Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Pension Plan. Why are the potential cost savings so large? The reason is the ludicrously costly pay-as-you-go funding policy currently utilized by the City of Portland. The only other place in the country relying on this type of pension funding policy today is Puerto Rico. While this type of policy was relatively common in the 1920s, everyone else abandoned it. $230 million of property taxes will be consumed by the FPDR Bureau in this budget that we're talking about. That's more money than the entire Portland Fire and Rescue Bureau. It's one-third of total property tax revenue collected by the city. Request the actuary provide an analysis of the cost savings of a comprehensive actuarial funding policy. Engage with independent national experts. Appoint an independent citizens commission with a mandate to study Portland FPDR funding policy reform and provide recommendations to council. Direct the city's Office of Government Relations to advocate for access to a state funding source to help address this issue. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Thank you so much for hosting this. My name is Heather Flachetto. I'm an urban planner and environmental designer. I'm testifying on my own behalf. I'm a resident of District 3, and I wanted to advocate for specifically retaining both the PBOT Plaza program and the Safe Blocks program. In addition to things like the small grants program, which supports community coalitions to give grants to small community organizations that do so much of the work that is free labor to the city, that has a multiplier effect like the Safe Blocks program and the PBOT Plaza program. These things give back so much more to the city than they cost through free labor of community members dedicating their time, their expertise, and their professional services. And so I want to just encourage that we may be asking the wrong questions. We are asking community members to sort of choose which of their children they would like to give up. These are all essential services. And so I think you've heard from many, many people that they would like you to not cut massive programs, but to make smaller incremental changes, not to use the hatchet or the chainsaw, but to use the scalpel. These programs give back so much more for safety and community placemaking, economic vitality, and social uplift in a time that we need them most. So I really want to encourage you to keep those small grant programs, the PBOT Plaza program, and the Safe Blocks program. Thank you so much.
Hello. What up, City Council? I'm John Paul, District 3 in Sunnyside neighborhood. I moved up to Portland in 2023, and the big things that really brought me to the city were the investments in the community. Things like bikeable neighborhoods and walkable areas, public transportation in the plazas, and its drive towards a clean future. So when you strip away things like that, if you're looking at stripping away those options and those investments, you're taking away realistically the parts of Portland that attract people, the parts of Portland that bring in people that want to be part of this community, versus, you know, if you're giving $300 million to police and allowing unlimited overtime versus capping that, you know, you really got to think, where can we cut in other areas versus where can we cut, you know, for the people that are coming in, for the people that live here, the people that have, you know, afternoons to go and enjoy a walk in the park or to ride their bike to the grocery store instead of driving a car, to save money on road maintenance and things like that by investing in public transportation. So please fund parks, after school programs, the Sun program, all of that. That's very vital for the community.
Tyler Fellini, Marianne Tybalt, and Elizabeth Dewar.
Good evening, everyone. So I've had the pleasure of reaching out to all of you in my role as the director at Portland Jobs of Justice, but I'm here today as a resident and renter in District 3. Police don't make safe communities. Services make safe communities. Support PBOT's efforts to develop public plazas to give people spaces to gather. Expand the city's greenways and connect existing corridors so cyclists can safely navigate the roads and Portlanders can be less reliant on cars. Keep Parks and Recs and Vibrant Communities program funding intact so that Portlanders can win back the families who are leaving the city and keep the families that are still here, here. Expand PSR as a crucial piece of the kind of wraparound services that are proven to help get people off the streets. Have an honest conversation about PPP's funding. Ask if any other bureau would be able to get away with having their staff intimidate city councilors at public meetings. Ask if any other bureau's staff would be able to act with the kind of impunity PPP officers seem to think they're entitled to. Ask if any other bureau would be given such a massive amount of the city's budget, despite a history of hostility towards so many of the city's residents that unfortunately continues to this day. When you're looking for where to cut, don't cut the kinds of services that will help rebuild Portland's not-so-distant reputation as a thriving example of progressive urban living. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. My name's Mary Ann Thibault, and I'm the Sports Management Supervisor for Portland Parks and Recreation. I have my friend Emmanuel here, and I'd like to introduce you to Team Wildcat. This is a team of our Golden Ball youth basketball team. As you can see, they're all genders, all ages, and we take anyone into our program. So I just want to tell you a little bit about citywide sports. The Golden Ball youth basketball program has operated for 87 years in the city of Portland. We serve 2,400 third through sixth grade children, all genders, and we believe that they otherwise would not have access to sports. We do the $5 5K fun runs that serve over 2,500 people every year. And we have more sports programs such as our volleyball league, cross country meets, and we do support for sports tournaments throughout the city, which increases tourism. Citywide sports programs provide a unique and vital opportunities for family and children, especially from low income and diverse backgrounds, to participate in sports. Many participants are from Title I schools. Citywide sports is a critical resource for youth who do not have access to competitive sports elsewhere. At its core, we reflect our city's commitment to equity, inclusion, and ensuring that everyone, regardless of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic background, has access to sports opportunity. Youth sports provides more than just physical activity. I'm asking you to let Team Wildcat play.
Hi there. My name is Liz. I'm a resident in District 3. I moved to Portland 3 years ago from Florida, and I did move for probably all the reasons you're thinking right now. I wanted to live somewhere that aligned with my values, and one of those examples would be biking to work today. No one tried to run me over with their car. It was really nice. So I've never cared about a city budget meeting before because I never cared about the city I lived in, and I really love Portland. So I have two ways that I would like to humbly suggest you could save money this year. One of which, after 15 days in office, 10 of the 12 new commissioners voted to add staff to their teams with contingency funding through June. This staff will cost $11.3 million per year. And if we don't have money for a program that supports 2,500 students like Sun, we shouldn't have money right now for counselors to add staff. I understand it's a new structure and you guys have a interesting and unknown workload at this time, but it just would make more sense not to add that right now. Second, cancel the new district-specific offices for counselors and utilize the extremely underutilized office space in downtown Portland instead. Four new district offices will require monthly rent and upkeep, in addition to one that will need a full build-out. These all cost a lot of money at a time when we are very short on that. And if we don't have money for parks and potholes, we should not have money for new offices. Thank you.
So we'll do one more call for Jill McCutcheon, Husseini Luwagie, and Eve Nalinders, and then Robert Clisby.
and just got a few things to ask. Oh, okay. Okay, I just got a few things to ask. I want to know why do we need to cut the parks and rec centers? I want to know, can you gentlemen and ladies are here at these So do you take these real sorry there. Do you take these real serious? Is what I want to know. Okay. I'm a little nervous here, so just give me a break. I'm trying. Anyways, and I want to know also, where does my tax dollars? Can anybody explain that to me? I know that you guys have all got a tough job and you're new, but how would you feel if they started cutting your wages? Would that make you happy? I don't think so. Charles Jordan became a good friend. I knew him for years. We had some of the nicest parks and rec centers in Portland when he was here. I know how he made it work, but he did a great job at it. And anyways, one more thing. Let's come back here in a year, same amount of people that are here, and talk again and see how they did. I think that would be a lot of fun, you know? So anyways, okay, thank you. And thank you for your time, and I wish you all the best of luck, I do. Okay, thank you.
So that's all the public, the folks we have signed up for in the room public comment, and I don't see any more raised hands online. We do have a few minutes left. Is there, if there's anybody in the room that would like to provide 90 seconds of public comment, we could take 2 to 3 people if you want to. Yeah, you can go ahead and come up and then say your name for the record, if you would.
Good evening, councilors, mayor. My name is Jesse Connor. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a CPPW staff at the Portland Housing Bureau. I've been there for 8 years. I definitely don't envy you. This budget cycle, and I think it is, you have some incredibly difficult choices to make. I think what I would offer is to try to center what we know are the city's established values, vision, and goals around anti-displacement, fiscal transparency, housing stabilization, and hopefully lead with our values when you all are making your very tough choices. And at most, centering those communities that would be most harmed by deficiencies in any of our budgeting programs. Thank you. Oh, and I would love a CPPW union contract too, please.
Good evening. My name is Ryan Sotomayor. I am a resident of District 3. I'm a renter. I've lived in District 3 since 2008, but I moved to Portland in 1990 with my family, so I was educated here. I want to speak to what so many community members have been speaking to from the perspective of a parent. We didn't have a library for 2 years during COVID. We didn't have a community center for the past 2 years. Our children are concerned about the community that they live in. When I was a child, I had real doubts about every adult in my life, at school, police, everywhere. When we moved to Portland in 1990, my parents took us to a community center pool. It's like, the adults care about us. The adults care about our future. We can have everything. We need you to be courageous. We need you to bring us everything. We need fully funded parks. We need fully funded transportation. We need access. We need services for houseless people, for everyone. We need it all. We need you to be courageous and figure it out. And we need you to come talk to us. You need to stop not taking the advice of the city administrator, but you need to come talk to the people that do the work. And you need to come talk to the communities. And I know that there's a very short runway. I'm sorry for taking a few extra seconds, but we need you. We need you to do what we elected you to do. We believe in you. Please help us. Please find us a way through this. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for your time. My name is Lorena, or Lorena, if you can roll your R's. I am a recent new homeowner who just moved from Clackamas County to Portland. I moved here for the buses and the public transportation and the ability to actually ride a bike. That's something I love. As someone who was raised in a low-income community, my mom, in California even, like my mom depended on community centers and community programs, and I do not envy your position right now and how you have to make these tough choices. And I do offer as much sympathy as I can in regards to that. My hope is that you prioritize pro-social issues, pro-social things that people that, things that allow people to feel connected to the community, such as public transportation, such as community centers, such as community programs, and prioritize budget cuts towards what I believe are anti-social, negatively impacted, such as harassing homeless people because they only have a car, and maybe we can focus on giving them showers or treating them like people, God forbid, and maybe focusing where $100 can feel like a paper cut for the police, but that's going to feel like a gaping wound for community centers. And I just want that to be kept in mind in regards to these situations. Thank you so much.
Good evening, councilors and mayor. My name is Naomi Lakai, and I am born and bred from Portland, and I was really compelled to come here today because of the risk of the city cutting down on three of our community centers. And I went to a K-8 school called Vestal, which is up the street from Mauna Villa, and as you know, a lot of our PPS schools are very severely underfunded, and Mauna Villa was definitely a safe haven for myself and my two siblings. My mother was a single mother, and she did the best that she could with working long hours at the retirement home, and if anything, relied on the community center for us to stay there a little after hours, as well as we were very, we also benefited from the summer lunch program, as well as teen nights, and just a lot of community building that is actually present at that community center. So I'm urging you all to please not remove these community centers, because they are very integral to us, because the Portland that I grew up in, I'm 27 now, but the Portland that I grew up in then versus now is rapidly changed. So especially given the fact that, you know, 82nd is a trafficking hub. So especially for our kids. So to make sure that we could have Mauna Villa, to have Mauna Villa still available is very integral to keep us out of trouble. Thank you.
So thank you all. It's 8:30. Really appreciate you taking the time to come and provide your comment and hear your fellow Portlanders share their comments, and of course complete the budget exercise, the budget reduction prioritization exercise. Hopefully you had a chance to do that. And again, we have QR codes around the room, and we'll post that on the budget join page. We will be taking all of the information that we've heard and sharing it back out with the councilors and the mayor, and then we will also make those general themes available online as well, so you can see what we did with your comments. Thank you so much for your time, and have a lovely evening.